WFYI podcast brought to you by Bloomington, Indiana, an American college town offering food and drink, college sports, outdoor activities, live music, cool art, and good times daily. Everyone is welcome in Bloomington. More information at visitbloomington.com.
We're going to take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. The Indianapolis jazz guitarist Wes Montgomery is an internationally celebrated music icon. Wes Montgomery is part of a lineage of important and influential guitarists that have emerged from Indianapolis. And on this week's show, we'll be listening to Indianapolis guitar greats beyond Wes Montgomery. I want to kick this episode off with one of the greatest living legends of Indianapolis music, guitarist Steve Weakley. Weakley rose to prominence in the early 1970s with the influential Indianapolis band Funk Incorporated. Here's an excerpt from their 1973 version of Curtis Mayfield's Give Me Your Love. That's Steve Weakley on guitar with Funk Incorporated. In 2018, I spoke with Steve Weakley, and we discussed some of the great Indianapolis guitar players of the past.
Yeah, and there were a lot of great guitar players in Indianapolis during the time you were coming up. Of course, Wes Montgomery, mm-hmm. Floyd Smith lived here.
Oh, Floyd Smith.
Scrapper Blackwell. You were young when he passed, but there were very influential guitar players here. Who do you remember hearing that was leaving an impression on you as a young person?
Floyd Smith, I met him several times. We hung out here, but I met him in Atlantic City. He was playing with Bill Doggett, and I was playing with Funk Incorporated. Cuba Gooding Jr.'s dad was in the group
Main called Ingredient.
Main Ingredient. He was in the room with us in Atlantic City. And Charles Erling was in the room. And down the street was B.B. King. And so me and Floyd got together. You know, it's good to see somebody from home. We get together and we go down to the Wonder Garden. We're at the Club Harlem. We went down to the Wonder Garden to see BB, and he was just what you see. He was a kind, generous cat, you know.
Did he know Floyd?
I believe he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't know me, but before I left, he did.
Yeah. Were you aware of Floyd's importance in the history of the guitar? He's one of the first musicians to ever play the electric guitar on a solo on a record.
I wasn't aware of that till much later on. Yeah. I knew he was part of the honky tonk and the Bill Doggett thing, you know. And he's another guy that was very generous with his time with me. He used to have me on gigs. He didn't need me, but he would have me on gigs. Me and Larry Clark, we do the NCO Club out in Fort Harrison. But it was just fun to hang out with Floyd, you know.
So was Wes Montgomery an influence on you at all? Were you listening to his music?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, when I heard him, I heard Kenny Burrell first. But he just seemed to have such a command of playing melodically and using block chords and melody chords. It's just beautiful music. Some people have a debate between the Riverside recordings and the more modern things that he did. I love them all. I mean, there was something in there for everybody.
You know? You were young when he passed. You were probably just 17, 18 years old, right?
I was in high school.
Yeah.
I was playing, but I was in high school, and it was, to me, very tragic because I wanted to see him in person.
Did you take any extra kind of influence or inspiration from the fact that he'd come up here in Indianapolis? Did that kind of help motivate you in your journey towards becoming a professional musician?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I never played anything that he's done note for note. But I'm sure I can hum most of the Moving West album.
Yeah.
I mean, I listened to it that much. You know, after school, you know, I'd come home and put it on and lay there and listen to it. I wouldn't try to play it. In fact, there was some of his material that I didn't try to play till I was well into my 30s. I had to get the sheet music to it. So whoever said he was musically uneducated, he knew what he was doing. Because if he didn't, he couldn't have done it.
Are there any other guitar players around Indianapolis during your early years that you remember or that left an impression on you or influenced you in some way?
Well, I used to like, I was playing at the place to play, and there was, you know, Lester Johnson, he's still around, he's playing bass. Mm-hmm. There was a guitar player, William Cochran.
Yeah.
Roach. Mm-hmm. Boy, he was something extra special. Oh man, he could play. Yeah. He could play anything. And, oh, Jennings. He played guitar. He would come by the Surfside. And he had some albums out where he was with McDuff. He used to come by the Surfside 7 and borrow picks. I don't think he really needed any picks. He just wanted to hang out. He was a... Mr. Jennings was an extraordinary guitar player.
Paul Whedon.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Surround Indy.
I got one of his things now that I listen to quite regularly. He was a very talented individual. And his phrasing and the way he thought through a song was the way it should be done.
Yeah. You know?
I got a chance to meet him back in the 80s. And he used to come up here when Jazz Kitchen was the place to start. And I put groups together for him, but he was very generous with his time. And there's a lot of good guitar players that have come out of Indianapolis, and I feel like I'm in great company.
Up next, I want to spin one of my favorite tracks from Steve Weakley, from Funk Incorporated's 1972 album, Chicken Lickin'. This is They Tryin' to Get Me.
Thank you.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. This week's show is titled Beyond Wes, Indianapolis Guitar Greats. And we just heard guitarist Steve Weekly performing with Funk Incorporated. Up next, I want to share a couple tracks from one of the most important guitarists in Indianapolis history, Bill Jennings. Jennings rose to prominence in the early 1950s as a member of rhythm and blues pioneer Louis Jordan's Timpani Five band. But by the end of that decade, Jennings had established a reputation as one of the finest guitarists in jazz. One of his biggest fans was B.B. King, who praised Jennings for his daring technical skill. And Jennings had a profound influence in his hometown, Indianapolis. Wes Montgomery was one of many guitarists in the city, taking note of Jennings' incredible arsenal of tricks and techniques. Here's an excerpt of a 1955 recording featuring Jennings performing in the octave style that Wes Montgomery would later discover and make famous. We're going to listen to a pair of tracks from Bill Jennings. Up first, we'll hear Dark Eyes off the 1959 album Enough Said. After that, we'll hear Big Boy off Jennings' self-titled 1954 EP. Thank you. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. This week's show is titled Beyond Wes, Indianapolis Guitar Greats. And we just heard a pair of tracks from Bill Jennings. Up next, we'll look back on the work of Floyd Smith. Smith was born in St. Louis in 1917, but he moved to Indianapolis during the 1960s and remained here until his death in 1982. Smith is best known for Floyd's Guitar Blues, a track he recorded with Andy Kirk's 12 Clouds of Joy in 1939. Some scholars credit this record as the first to feature a blues solo played on electric guitar. Thank you. In 2018, I spoke with one of Smith's former bandmates, the Indianapolis jazz drummer Larry Clark. Let's listen back to an excerpt of our conversation.
You played with some of the most extraordinary musicians in Indianapolis history, and I want to ask you about a few of these names. People know about Charlie Christian, right? Supposedly recorded the first electric guitar solo with the Benny Goodman Orchestra in late 1939, around 1940. Uh-huh. A gentleman who lived in Indianapolis for, I think, 20, 30 years, Floyd Smith, actually recorded in March of 1939 with Andy Kirk in his Clouds of Joy, which is really one of the first electric guitar solos.
It was
predates
the first.
Charlie Christian.
Floyd's solo. Guitar yeah. Blues. I have a copy of it. He lived
in Indianapolis during his later years, came right. in the 60s, and you spent many years playing with Floyd Smith, correct?
Correct.
Tell me about working with this musician.
Oh. Do you want the first gig or
yeah,
later
sure.
on?
Start with the first.
Well, you know, like most young musicians, we get full of ourselves, you know. So I was working with him, Jimmy Guilford, and Alan Reeves on organ. It was interesting because, like, we started playing this song and they started soloing, and I got happy, you know, as most young drummers do. So Floyd turned around and said, "Hey, baby, you're building a house." I said, "Okay, I'll calm down." Little time passes by, the music gets in me again. "Hey, baby, I said you're building a guy." I'm, you know. I calmed down. The third time, all these explanational words. You know, the thing that was really beautiful back then, you learned to respect your elders, you know. There was always someone there to teach you something. They weren't always nice about the way they said it, but you knew they cared. And this is why they would take the time with you. If they didn't care, they say, "Oh, you're all right, baby boy. Come on. I'll see you later." And they never call you again. Yeah. Believe me, I've been there.
Why do you think Floyd never got the credit he deserved as a major innovator in music? And did that cause any bitterness in him? Did he feel like he was slighted in terms of his contribution to the music?
Well, Floyd, okay, here in the States, there was some controversy, right? But you go to Europe, everybody knew him. When I was in Europe, you know how musicians say, "Who'd you play with, man?" You know? I'd name this person. "Oh, yeah, that's a great player." I'd name that person. "Yeah, yeah." And I get to Floyd's name. "You play with Floyd Smith? Oh, my God." You know. And that's when I learned to respect who he really was. Yeah, my kids call him Uncle Floyd anyway. You know.
And you played with him up until the time of his death, right? Around, was it 84 when he passed?
Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, if anyone tries to go research Floyd Smith online, there's a lot of misinformation about him. There was a disco record producer named Floyd Smith who was active in the 1970s. And if you go to Floyd Smith, the guitarist, Wikipedia page, it will tell you he was a famous disco producer. And there's this kind of crisscross of misinformation that's happening. Yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to mention that if you research him, that's all
this is
completely
true.
Inaccurate. Yeah,
yeah. I went online and because I knew what I was looking for. And there was a great baritone player. you knew him, Les Taylor, Bear.
That's the Bear, yeah.
The Bear. There was Floyd and the Bear playing together in Europe, you know. So they were, he was an incredible man. Like, true story. We were doing a thing downtown, one of the hotels, and it was just a trio. Carl Bailey on bass, Floyd and myself. And we were playing, bang, bang, bang. And Jimmy Cole was coming on later with the big band. So Floyd said, all right, boys, just put the hot pots on, honky tonk. That was his thing, man. And he put the pots on.
He played with Bill Doggett too, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yes, he did.
Floyd Smith played with Bill Doggett.
Yeah, you can see him online when he's playing with Bill Doggett.
And up next, we're going to listen to a 1972 live recording of Floyd Smith performing in Paris, France. This track is titled Relaxin' with Floyd. Thank you. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. This week's show is titled Beyond Wes, Indianapolis Guitar Greats. Up next, I want to spin a track from Paul Whedon. Wes Montgomery and Paul Whedon were both born in Indianapolis in 1923. And the guitarists both achieved success in the Indianapolis music scene during the 1950s. Paul Whedon recorded and performed with a long list of jazz greats, including Coleman Hawkins, Sonny Stitt, Gene Ammons, and Eddie Lockjaw Davis. But in the 1960s, Whedon relocated to Oslo, Norway, and remained there until his death in 2011. And I want to spin a classic track Whedon recorded during his time in Norway. From 1974, this is Paul Whedon with Flatfoot. Thank you. Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. This week's show is titled Beyond Wes, Indianapolis Guitar Greats. The Indianapolis rhythm and blues scene of the 1960s produced a number of great guitarists, including Alphonso Young of the Presidents. And Alphonso Young is the star character in a legendary bit of Indianapolis music lore. In 1962, Young squared off against Jimi Hendrix in a guitar battle on Indiana Avenue. Author and historian David Williams was on the scene that night, and he shared some memories of Alphonso Young and the Presidents during our 2019 interview.
And I think one of the most important groups to mention during that period is the Presidents, who came up, you said, from, was it Louisville?
Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky, yeah. The Beecher Housing Development. And that was some similar to Lockfield. It was public housing in Louisville, Kentucky. And they came up here in the early 60s, you know, because for better exposure and more engagements on the avenue.
The scene here was just so active, they
it
could make
so
a better
active.
Living.
They were able to do much better here financially.
And it's my understanding that this was a really influential group. I talked to a lot of the musicians who came along in the funk generation, and they look back to groups like the Presidents kind of setting the tone for that era. Mm-hmm. And they had a really polished showmanship. I saw Steve Weekly the other day, and he told me they would wear mascara and makeup to have this kind of very bold presence on the stage. He said he'd never seen men wear makeup before
there was
the
Baby
Presidents.
Leon. Yeah, Baby Leon, Leon Northern. I think he was originally from Fort Wayne. And what people don't realize is that after the Presidents, I'm going to drop a gem on you right now. After the Presidents left Indianapolis, they toured in Minneapolis, Minnesota for about 6 months to a year. There's a little guy would come in the studio, and he would sit and take in everything. He just enjoyed himself, and he saw Baby Leon on stage with that flamboyant, with capes and his processed hair, the bouffant processed hair, and singing high falsetto and slipping and sliding across stages. And he was able to, he was taking notes. And later on, that fella developed his own band, and he became somebody, named Prince. You ever heard of somebody named Prince? Prince, he patterned his stage theatrics after Baby Leon. People don't realize that. Baby Leon made Prince. Baby Leon from the Avenue, from the place to play. He was the original, he was the, he manufactured Prince.
Did you ever have a chance to see the Presidents play?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, that's how I met Alphonso Boo Young. He was the guitarist when Jimi Hendrix would, matter of fact, I have a photograph of Jimi Hendrix and Boo Young on stage at the place to play. That's early 1960, 61. And I would see, it would be there when they performed on stage. And as I said before, in intermission, Boo Young taught Jimi Hendrix a lot of his licks. And the parts, and no pun intended, when he would lick, Boo Young would play the guitar with his tongue. Jimi Hendrix took that with him to Woodstock later on and around the world. That was Boo Young, Alphonso Boo Young's routine that Jimi Hendrix picked up.
What do you remember about seeing the Presidents play in the early 1960s? Do you have any memories that stand
out? Yeah, my memory is that Baby Leon would come out there one set, flamboyant to the max. He'd go in 5 minutes, come out with another flamboyant that was not any way artistically connected to the flamboyance of the first set. He must have had a trailer truck in the alley with what had the name flamboyance written across it, because he would go back there and, I mean, he was fantastic, you know, and he was a showman to the max. He could sing, but he was a greater showman than he was a vocalist. We'll be right back.
from 1968, this is The Presidents with Shoeshine.
All right, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
I want you to get in line. Have you heard about the boogaloo and the grapevine? But you haven't did one thing, baby. About the shoe shine. On your hips, baby, yeah, yeah, yeah. Let your backbone slip, baby, yeah, yeah, yeah. Back up now, baby, yeah. And do the shoot shine, yeah. Hey, everybody, why don't you do it right? Do you want to start a fight, baby, yeah? You better do it right, yeah. I want you to do the shoot shine. Bop that rag, bop that rag now.
I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. This week's show is titled Beyond Wes, Indianapolis Guitar Greats. We've been listening to music and stories about some of Indy's legendary guitar greats. And no conversation about Indianapolis guitarists would be complete without mentioning Scrapper Blackwell, one of the most influential guitarists in blues history. Scrapper Blackwell rose to prominence in 1928 with pianist and vocalist Leroy Carr. Blackwell's single-note guitar lines on his recordings with Carr revolutionized the instrument's role in blues music. We're going to listen to a live track Blackwell recorded just a few years before his death. From 1959, this is Scrapper Blackwell with Nobody Knows You When You're Down and Out. I'm Kyle Long, and you've been listening to Cultural Manifesto. Thank you for tuning in.
Once I lived the life of a millionaire, spending my money, I did not care. Can my friends afford a good time? My bootleg liquor, champagne and wine. Oh Lord, when I got busted, I felt it. Didn't have no money, no where to go. But this is the truth, without a doubt. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Nobody wants you when you're down and out. Don't you know that rent man was by the other day?
And he told me my rent was due and I'd have to pay. Well, I looked in my pocket and I didn't have one dime. Apart from a friend, they don't have time. So I tried to move it the best I can, thinking someday I'm gonna meet me a friend. But boy, this is the truth, without a doubt. Nobody wants you when you're down. I mean, when you're down. What do you say this morning? Hey, Sally, what do you say this morning? Well, I just come to get a little drunk of corn liquor, Lord, I hope and corn. Sally, you're the best old friend I ever knew. Sally, you're the best old friend, Lord, I ever knew. I like your corn liquor, but it makes me so doggone. I'm gonna take a walk down the alley just to meet my dear old friend. I'm gonna take a walk down the alley just to meet my dear old friend. I'll be full of Sally's liquor and running drunk again. I'm going down to Sally's, where me and my Louie's stomping down. I'm going down to Sally's, where me and my Louie's stomping down. And I won't come out until I wear both shoes and.
I'm leaving, I said, you crying. Crying won't make me stay. I'm leaving, I said, you crying. Crying won't make me stay. Lord, I'll be back to play with you, Lord, some more.